Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, March 9th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Broken Alarms Shutter Chateau, by Maria Nagel and Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. The City of Bloomington shut down the Chateau Hotel and Conference Center on Wednesday because its fire alarm system doesn't work. But the adjoining Tony Roma's restaurant remains open for the time being. A contractor informed city officials that the system was non-operational, according to a statement issued by the city shortly after 5 p.m. Wednesday. City staff members investigated and confirmed the situation, and, in the utmost of caution and concern for safety, required the building at 1601 Jumer Drive to close until the issue is resolved. About 50 guests at the hotel were displaced by the closure, said Bloomington Community Development Director Tom Dabereiner, whose office oversees the enforcement of the city's building codes. We're still trying to figure out what to do, because we hadn't planned on this, said Lucy Putnam, a guest from Green Bay, Wisconsin, who was in town visiting family. We've got a place to stay, but we had been looking forward to a vacation with a nice room. A timeline for resolution is unknown at this time, city officials said. We need from them an idea of when the new system will be installed, said Dabereiner. I believe there may be a meeting Thursday, but I'm not absolutely sure about that. An investigation into the operating status of the fire alarm system at Tony Roma's, which is connected to the hotel but is operated separately, is ongoing. Results are expected Thursday. Due to the restaurant's first-floor location and other factors, the city is allowing it to remain open until the assessment of its system is complete. There is a 2-hour firewall between the two structures, and so it would be easier to get people out of there in an emergency compared to 4 floors of a hotel, Dabereiner said. The lack of notice left guests like John Brown of Springfield, Missouri, who was in town on business, suddenly changing their evening plans to include a search for lodging. I've got another hotel room, but had planned to spend all evening preparing a presentation, he said. I'm not sure how to explain this. I've never heard of this happening before. Dabereiner said it wasn't the first time a business had been shut down for fire alarm system issues. It's happened before, but safety is the most important thing in a situation like this, he said. Neither Bloomington Chateau Partners, which owns and operates the hotel, nor the hotel's general manager, Jeremy Kruthis, could be reached for comment Wednesday. Tony Roma's management verified that the restaurant was open, but declined further comment. The move is the latest woe for the Chateau, which was bought by Bloomington Chateau Partners in 2002, 14 years after it opened as Jumer's Chateau, and 3 years after Jumer's filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The ownership group took out a $9.5 million mortgage for the 180-room hotel in 2007, and for years has struggled to pay its local taxes. In January 2015, it owed the city $335,000. The hotel now faces foreclosure and sale after the owner failed to make any mortgage payments through at least September 2016, according to a complaint filed with the court this month. At that time, Bloomington Chateau Partners was $8.3 million in debt. The next story is headlined, Women Stand Together, Share Message of Hope. Hundreds gather in Twin Cities to mark Day of Celebration. By Derek Bay. Bloomington. For Barbara Little of Bloomington, Wednesday night was about one thing, unity. We are so strong when we stand together, she said. The whole idea of empowering women is so important. Little was one of an estimated 400 people to gather at Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts for Empowered Women, Empower Women, an event to celebrate International Women's Day in the Twin Cities. Over 2 hours, female speakers, singers, musicians, dancers, and other performers, all from Central Illinois, spread a message of hope and affirmation to an attentive crowd, many clad in red to recognize the day. We realized nothing was planned in town for International Women's Day, and we thought that was a void, said Alexis Wallstein, a subject librarian for Women's and Gender Studies at Illinois State University, and part of a group that organized the event. We really wanted to do this for the community. While many International Women's Day events Wednesday challenge social conditions, including the A Day Without a Woman strike that asked women worldwide to stay home from work and avoid spending money to show the effect they have on the economy every day, Wallstein said the local event was intended to be celebratory. We decided to make this a celebration because, given the current political situation, there are more than enough opportunities to march in the street. We wanted everybody to come together, she said. It's a celebration by not just women, but anyone who identifies with women or has been affected by a woman in their life. The event also promoted local volunteerism, inviting attendees to visit a Google spreadsheet full of volunteer opportunities in Bloomington Normal. As of Wednesday night, it included entries in disability, elderly, environmental, health, hunger, and social justice fields, including from several prominent community organizations. We can go to the marches, but if we aren't taking action in our communities, we aren't following through, Wallstein said. No matter what you're interested in or passionate about, somebody here can benefit from your time. Sponsors covered the cost of the venue, so all donations to the free event, more than $4,000 as of Wednesday night, will go to Neville House, a 24-hour domestic violence shelter run by Mid-Central Community Action. MCCA also ran a booth at the event soliciting material donations and providing information on their services. We're so excited to be celebrating International Women's Day and thankful to the amazing women who put together this event, said Matt Dratt, Director of Resource Development and Community Engagement for MCCA. This community really stands with us. Stacy Tutt, a University of Illinois law professor and the evening's first speaker, shared how she struggled with sexual abuse by her father and how that struggle made her want to help others. She later worked for Prairie State Legal Services, a not-for-profit offering free legal help to low-income people. I am a survivor whose tragic past has laid the foundation for my future, she said. You are not alone. We are all in this together. Morgan Schulte, a special education teacher at the Baby Folds Hammett School and a Tawanda native, spoke about how her experience as part of a family with foster children and her mother's example made her a strong woman, too. When I think of what it means to be strong, the words that come to mind are empathetic, sensitive, selfless, tolerant, patient, charitable, and loving, she said. As strong women do, we help each other in need, even if it means running towards chaos while juggling 100 things at once and feeling emotionally drained. Jennifer Rask, who attended the event with Little, said she was excited to hear Kendall Miles, a friend, sing. Now, more than ever, we need to unify and celebrate our differences, she said. The next story is entitled, DEETS, Impasse Could Lead to Higher Education Disaster, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. With the failure of the so-called grand bargain to resolve Illinois' budget stalemate, higher education officials are expressing concern over what comes next. If the impasse continues, at some point, a higher education disaster will occur, Illinois State University President Larry Dietz said Wednesday. Dietz was not specific, but the news has not been good at several schools. Governor State University in Chicago's south suburbs announced Tuesday that it will cut 22 programs and increase tuition 15%. It has already cut 35 degrees and certificate programs in the last 2 years. Chicago State University enrolled only 86 freshmen last fall and has seen overall enrollment fall to less than half what it was 6 years ago. With 3,578 students in fall 2016, compared to 7,362 in 2010. An emergency funding measure was needed to funnel a total of $17 million to Chicago State, Western Illinois, and Eastern Illinois universities late last year. Speaking to the Pantagraph's editorial board with several members of the Illinois Coalition to Invest in Higher Education, Dietz said passage of a budget, even one with huge cuts, would represent stability. The worst thing is not knowing. Although ISU remains strong and stable, Dietz said, all of us feel the same frustration about not having a budget. Heartland Community College President Rob Widmer agreed that uncertainty has been the overwhelming problem for us. Randy Dunn, president of the Southern Illinois University System, said paralysis is setting in because of the lack of direction, and it has us frozen in time. Dunn criticized the lack of leadership at the state level, saying the approach seems to be to see who the first one is to not be able to open in the fall. To me, that's a dereliction of duty. Members of the coalition argue that higher education is an economic engine that is producing future employees and entrepreneurs that the state needs for its growth. Look at higher education as an investment rather than a cost, said Dunn. All schools have been making cuts, trying to protect their core missions and limit impacts on students. Dunn said the failure of the grand bargain means potentially a big second round of reductions that we won't be able to do, with cuts around the edges. Dietz and Dunn are among university leaders who testified Tuesday before the Senate Higher Education Committee. Dietz told the committee that instead of asking how long universities can go without a state budget, the question should be, how long can you go before Illinois public universities are severely, perhaps irreparably, damaged? He said, I'm afraid the answer is that's already happened. Public institutions are not the only ones being affected by the impasse. Illinois Wesleyan University President Eric Jensen told the editorial board a quarter of IWU's students receive monetary award program grants, and the percentage is even higher at other private schools. Many institutions have been giving students credit for the state-funded grants so they can enroll, and hoping the state will come through with the money later. One way to increase the pressure for action could be for schools to stop covering the cost of MAP grants without state funding. But Dunn said, we're not going to do that to our students and region. We're not going to play that card. The next story is entitled, District 87 Limits RIF Dismissals to 8. STEM Camp Among Summer Programs Approved by Board, by Lenore Sapota. Bloomington. The District 87 School Board approved dismissal notices for 8 employees at its meeting Wednesday night. The board also approved summer school programs, including STEM Camp for children who were starting kindergarten to 5th grade. The dismissal notices went to 3 probationary teachers, 4 paraprofessionals, and the business community coordinator. The latter dismissal is specifically related to uncertainty over state and federal funding. The reduction in force notices are required annually before the end of the school year, and some of the people who are dismissed may be rehired if funding is available. The number receiving dismissal notices this year is the same as last year. Superintendent Barry Riley said he was pleased the district was able to keep the number low, although he commented that the action is very personal to the names that are on there. Riley said most other districts will have more people subject to dismissal. District 87 was able to keep the numbers relatively low despite very difficult times and uncertainty about state funding, because we have built up appropriate fund balances to take some risk. If state funding is lower than anticipated, those balances will help the district absorb the cost, he explained. Another factor that helps me to be more optimistic is that the district saw a little uptick in revenue from last year. In recent years, property tax revenue has been flat or down. The summer school program involves classes and programs that are funded by grants or tuition, or are required under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. STEM Camp will run August 7th to 11th and cost $50 per student. Scholarships are available. Cindy Helmers, Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum, said there will be an adjoining teacher camp where teachers will learn about setting up lessons related to STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and math. The lessons will be piloted during the camp and used during the school year, said Helmers. The camp will be open to students from other districts, and Helmers said she hopes to have 240 students at the camp. Riley said the camp is a great opportunity for our kids and a way to help our community by encouraging students to learn more about STEM fields. Raiders 101, a transition program for new freshmen, is scheduled for July 10th to 21st. But Helmer said it is dependent on grant funding, and we may have to make some adjustments depending on grant availability. The program has received funding through the United Way of McLean County in the past. Other summer school programs include credit recovery and extension courses for high school and junior high school students June 5th to 30th. These courses will be taught online and tuition is $250. Scholarships are available. And here is another school board story entitled Unit 5 Board Approves New Science Curriculum by Julia Evelsizer. Normal. A new science curriculum will be introduced to elementary students at McLean County Unit 5 schools next year. The Unit 5 School Board approved paying $280,000 over 37 months to buy resources for the new curriculum, including teacher resource books and access to online programs. In addition, the district paid $100,000 toward the science package from the Curriculum Fund. We make many standards changes, but this one is bigger than most, said Carmen Bergman, Director of Elementary Education. She said the new curriculum would begin with hands-on experiments and student inquiry, and then move on to lessons on those topics, the reverse of current teaching techniques that lead from lessons to experiments. We haven't purchased new science curriculum for the elementary schools since 2006, said Bergman. We found that students become more flexible thinkers when they learn this way early on. Board President Meta Mickens-Baker, a former science teacher, said she was excited to see the program implemented. This is about critical thought and inquiry and learning fundamental experience that builds comfort with science knowledge, said Mickens-Baker. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel announced Chris McGraw will move from associate principal at Evans Junior High School to the principal's job this fall. He will succeed Trevor Chapman, who will be principal at Normal Community High School. James Harden also was announced as the new director of human resources for the district, succeeding Bruce Weldy, who is retiring. Harden is leaving his position as high school principal at Crete Moni District 201 in Crete. The board also approved bids for 6 roof projects to be completed over the summer. Full roof replacement was approved for Prairieland Elementary School for $464,639, Normal Community West High School for $668,494, and Brigham Elementary School for $354,700. Partial roof replacement was approved for a section of Eugene Field, the NCHS Baseball Press Box, and the Carlock Elementary School Gym, totaling $168,700. All projects are for 30-year roofs. The next article is entitled, Inmate mental health suit to go forward. Appeals court rules in favor of IDOC prisoner. By Edith Brady Lunny. Chicago. A mentally ill inmate at Pontiac Correctional Center will be allowed to move forward with his federal claims against two doctors he accuses of sending him to segregation in retaliation for making complaints against prison staff. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit ruled Tuesday that U.S. District Court Judge Michael Meem erred when he dismissed inmate Ashur Rasho's claims against Dr. Michael Massa and Dr. John Garlick in a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court for the Central District of Illinois. Rasho, who was an inmate in a class action case that prompted sweeping court-ordered changes to how mental illness is handled in the Illinois prison system, was sent to state prison in 1996 for 8 years in a Cook County burglary case. A 25-year term was added to his sentence for battery against correctional officers, and he is to be released in 2019. In 2004, Rasho was transferred to Pontiac's mental health unit for treatment for his serious mental disorders. He stayed there until 2006, when Massa recommended his transfer to the segregation unit, according to court records. Massa did not believe Rasho was benefiting from his time in the unit and that his symptoms of antisocial personality disorder put others in the unit at risk, said the ruling. Garlick concurred with Massa's opinion. Rasho challenged the doctor's opinion in court, noting that prison doctors continued to prescribe psychotropic medications for him after he was housed in segregation. In his dismissal of Rasho's claim, Meem found it unlikely that the inmate could provide sufficient evidence of physical harm as a result of segregation. But Rasho did present evidence of at least one undisputed incident of self-mutilation after he left the treatment unit, said the appeals court. Rasho argues he was denied adequate treatment for about 20 months in segregation. The Seventh Circuit judges agreed with Meem's decision to dismiss claims against Pontiac's former warden Eddie Jones and two other doctors. The Department of Corrections was unavailable to comment. In a statement on the ruling, Rasho's lawyer, Alan Mills, with the Uptown People's Law Center, noted an opinion from expert witness Dr. Joel Silverberg that inmates in the North Segregation Unit were isolated and treated like animals. The recent ruling establishes important protections for prisoners who are being mistreated. They should not fear retaliation when they complain about their treatment, said Mills. Here is a story entitled Renner Reviving City Liquor Commission by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Mayor Terry Renner is reviving the city's three-member liquor commission. The Illinois Attorney General's Public Access Bureau previously ruled that Renner did not violate the state's Open Meetings Act by consulting with one or both liquor commissioners outside of a public meeting. Renner was notified of the decision in a letter he received February 27th from Assistant Attorney General Leah Bartelt. She determined the commission serves an advisory role and is not a public body regulated under the meetings law. Because of that decision, the mayor is reforming the commission, he said Wednesday. I liked having a three-person commission because you have differing perspectives and the meetings don't go on too long, said Renner. Renner has asked Twin City businessmen Jack Batoel and Lindsay Powell, a Growmark manager, to assist him on the commission. Mr. Batoel is excited to provide a business perspective with knowledge and experience of the industry while supporting his community, said Renner in a news release. Batoel has been a real estate agent for 11 years and spent 16 years in the bar and restaurant business, including 10 years as an owner-operator, Renner noted. Powell has been Growmark's marketing communications manager for 10 years. She is an active member of Sunrise Rotary, a mentor in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program, and a member of the Baby Folds Festival of Trees Steering Committee, the mayor noted. They will start Tuesday when the commission meets at 4 p.m. at City Hall. The appointments are not subject to council ratification. On October 1st, Renner suspended assistance from then-Liquor Commission members Jim Jordan and Sue Feldkamp until the Attorney General's office ruled on claims alleging the commission violated the Illinois Open Meetings Act. Renner decided to act alone on liquor-related matters until the issue was clarified to avoid the possibility of more complaints. The Open Meetings Act requires public notice whenever a majority of a quorum is present to discuss board business. On a three-member board, two members discussing business could constitute a public meeting. The next story is entitled, Clinton Hospital OKs Expansion for 3D Mammography, by Paul Sweech. Clinton. Warner Hospital and Health Services Imaging Suite will undergo a renovation and small expansion to allow for the hospital's upgrade to 3D mammography. The Warner Hospital Board voted 4-1 Wednesday night to approve spending $368,238 for a Hologic 3D mammography unit and $72,625 to renovate and expand the imaging suite. The renovation and 80-square-foot expansion will be for the new 3D mammography unit, a private restroom, and to make the area more attractive to women, Hospital CEO Paul Scowron said after the meeting. Although we are in the best cash position that we have been in for many years, we will not use money from operations because it's unclear how the Affordable Care Act repeal and replace will affect hospitals, Scowron said. Instead, money will come from the Bill Davenport Estate, the Kenneth Wayne Smith Estate, and the Dr. John Warner Hospital Foundation, Scowron said. Work is scheduled to begin May 1st with the removal of the existing digital mammography unit. We expect to be operational no later than August 1st, he said. This type of mammography, offered at other health centers in central Illinois for several years, gives clinicians a three-dimensional view of breast tissue, helping doctors to distinguish harmless abnormalities from real tumors, increasing breast cancer detection and decreasing false positives and the need for follow-up imaging, radiologists have told the Pantograph. Our vision is to reverse outmigration of patients from our community, Scowron said. Our competitors all have 3D. The doctors are recommending it. This upgrade was necessary and is in alignment with our vision to be the provider of choice for our community. Other service line improvements are being evaluated, he said. And here is notice of a road closure, Lutz Road, Bloomington. Lutz Road, between Luther Oaks and Morris Avenue, is closed to through traffic for 5 days because of sewer work. Drivers should use Greenwood Avenue to visit Luther Oaks. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for March 9th. Please stay tuned.